Good afternoon, Philadelphia Eagles fans. Everybody's in a good mood this week. Victory Tuesday, Victory Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Hey, we got a W. No ties, no L's. We got a W. Today on the Seth Joyner Show, we are going to do a talk to him Tuesday. We want to feel your questions. We want to talk about the Eagles. We want to talk about this victory. We also want to talk about where the Philadelphia Eagles are at this time and how you as fans are feeling about this win. Will this win propel this team forward? Everyone wants to feel good about this win, but that was last week. What is it going to look like this week? And what is it going to look like in subsequent weeks? You can talk to me live if you like. Give me a call at 361-857-9847. And what we will do is we will field some questions live on air. You guys with the best questions, my producer, Derek Stevenson, will connect you with a link. You'll be able to come on board, ask me questions, make comments. I want to make the show interactive when we do shows like this. So let's figure out, you know, some of the best questions and bring you guys on board. And let's talk about these Philadelphia Eagles. I want to thank Viget, our first and new sponsor to the Seth Joyner Show. We'll have a little ad for you guys later on. You can check it out, see what it's all about. But, you know, right now, let's talk about these Philadelphia Eagles. And let's talk about what they accomplished the other night. Hey, listen, everybody thought that there was no way in the world the Philadelphia Eagles could get on that airplane and go to San Francisco. And even though the San Francisco 49ers were beat up, they have their own injuries. Some of their top players are out. The quarterback was out, the best defensive player and second best defensive player probably was out as well. Two of their top running backs were out. But they found a way to get a victory in week three. And the Philadelphia Eagles coming in, really limped in, coming off a tie with the Cincinnati Bengals. And no one really felt that they can walk away with this victory. It was an average day for our embattled quarterback, Carson Wentz. When you look at the numbers, they weren't all that impressive. 18 for 28. 193 yards, a touchdown, and one interception. In my opinion, not really his fault off of a tip pass. But what I will say is that this guy battled his behind off on Sunday. You know, you talk about a team competing, and it was a team win. But this is the kind of vigor, and this is the type of energy, and this is the type of enthusiasm and fight that we need to see from Carson Wentz, because I believe it's contagious. As the leader of this football team, it's imperative, in my opinion, that Carson play with this kind of enthusiasm and lay it all on the line type of mentality. Because what it does is it pretty much sends a message to the rest of the team. If the most important guy on the team and if the highest paid player on the team is willing to lay his body on the line the way that Carson Wentz laid his body on the line on Sunday Night Football, that should inspire everyone else to raise their level. That's why I talked about in subsequent weeks how I really didn't like his body language. When things weren't going well, he pretty much hung his head, slumped his shoulders, and that sends a message, you know, to not only his offensive teammates, but it sends a message to the entire team, because he is supposed to be the unsung leader of this football team. And you saw a guy with a different mindset, with a different belief system about himself, with a different focus in that game on Sunday night. And like I said, the numbers weren't all that spectacular, but what did we see? We saw the Carson Wentz of 2017, a 2018 pre-injury. Not only, you know, did he have good numbers in the passing game, and average numbers, I would say, But I don't care about that because I could care less if he threw for under 200 yards every single week. I'm pretty sure Doug Peterson, the talking heads, would look at it and say the statistics aren't there, the numbers aren't there. But isn't the number one objective when you step into a game, the number one objective is to win the game, to win the game, okay? It doesn't matter what it looks like. That's why you have three phases, an offense, a defense, and a special team. Because invariably, one of those phases from week to week, game to game, is not going to be able to carry its weight, and it's up to the other two phases to lift them up and carry them along, okay? So I don't care about numbers. I don't care what his numbers look like. But he got involved in the run game, which I like. We saw some RPO. We saw some read option. We saw some things, you know, that we hadn't seen from Carson in a while. And I would submit to you guys, you know, and, you know, chime in with the questions, chime in with the comments. I'm reading them down my right side here. I would submit to you guys that, you know what, hey, the Eagles, when Carson came back after the Super Bowl, were in protective mode. They wanted Carson to be a pocket passer. They wanted him to get the ball out of his hand. They wanted to try to protect him. And one thing you know about this game of football is you can't protect the player. You just got to let the player play. Now, I mentioned last week when I had Ike Reese on, you know, he is the president of the LTBB community, which means let the Bronco buck. He's been talking about this ever since Carson came back from injury. You just got to let this guy be himself. And what you saw was him being him, getting him out the pocket. He throws the ball much better, in my opinion, when he's on the move, unless it's a quick throw, than he does when he's standing in the pocket. I talked about this before. You know, when you run a shotgun offense, the problem when you're trying to pass out of a shotgun offense is that the quarterback stands at 4 yards. He takes the snap. And oftentimes, you know, he doesn't take more than one or two steps backwards. So he's dealing with a shortened pocket. If there's any kind of pressure, if there's any kind of pushing of the pocket, these guys are at his feet right now. It's not like he's taking a seven-step drop, you know, where he's got room to step up and step up into the pocket. You know, we're talking about some young guys that are trying to find their way and trying to find their footing. You got to put him in a better position in the pocket where he actually has a pocket where he can climb, a pocket where he can step into, a pocket where he feels comfortable. But what I liked is that, you know, they ran some bootlegs. What I liked is they ran some misdirection stuff. They ran some RPO stuff. They ran some read option stuff that gave Carson Wentz an opportunity to pull the ball and run. Hey, 7 carries for 37 yards. He averaged, you know, 5.3 yards a carry, and he scored a touchdown rushing the football because teams hadn't seen Carson do this in quite some time. And I think it's an advantage for him if he can be smart about when to get down, when to stay up, when to, you know, take on defenders and when not to, because it creates for them another thing from a defensive coordination standpoint and from a defensive team standpoint. They have to take into account that every time that he sticks that ball in the running back's belly, that he could pull it out and take off with it, and that he's unaccounted for. But beyond that, I love the way the guy competed, you know, pulling that ball and running for a touchdown, the scrambles that he had, the call run plays where he pulled the ball out and competed, the fourth and one, you know, where he dove over the top to get the first down to keep that drive alive. I think that, you know, when Carson's in that mode, that's when he's at his best. You know, now, are there times where you want to see him in the pocket, be the guy who stands in there and throws and delivers the ball downfield? Absolutely. You know, listen, we had an unsung hero in Travis Fulgham come out of nowhere with a 42-yard touchdown. We didn't know who that guy was. That play, Carson was standing in the pocket with great anticipation that the blitz was coming and realizing, you know, that he had a mismatch on the outside. He dropped a dime and threw a perfect pass for a touchdown. Nothing wrong with that, okay? But there are other times where you got to get Carson on the move. You got to get him out of the pocket. The only play I don't want to see him run is sprint right, option right. I think that's the worst football play in all of football, where you line three guys up to the right, you sprint that way, and then all of a sudden, you know, the quarterback, every step that he takes, the field is becoming shorter and shorter. Defenses know that play is coming just by the alignment, of the wide receivers. And oftentimes, these geniuses that we call offensive coordinators will even run it into the short side of the field. I don't understand it. But I love the fact that they moved the pocket and they allowed him, they kind of took the reins off of him and just let him be himself. Also happy with the rushing game. Hey, listen, even though, you know, Miles Sanders only got 13 carries, and no one really, they really didn't set the world on fire from a per carry standpoint. What I like is the fact that there were 28 runs and they were 28 passes. And what that does, in my opinion, is that gives Carson Wentz some balance so that you can keep defenses off balance. The previous three games, this football team was averaging 45 passes a game and only 22 runs a game. When your quarterback is struggling, that's the one thing that you can't do. You can't put him in those types of situations. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I give Doug Peterson a lot of credit for being able to make the adjustment. We all know that Doug wants to throw the ball. He wants to showcase Carson's arm. He wants to showcase his ability to throw the ball downfield. He wants to showcase these draft picks that they've invested in and try to get the ball down the field. But there's nothing wrong with 7-play drives, 12-play drives, 15-play drives, like the Eagles had the other night. You move the chain. You keep, you know, you eat up clock. You keep the defense off balance. You balance up your offense so that your offensive linemen have a chance to be successful. And I like, you know, what I saw out of Doug. And I like the play call and I like the adjustment. You know, knowing that you've got a guy that just wants to throw the ball all over the yard, he realized, hey, my quarterback is struggling and I got to do whatever it is that I can do to try to help him get out of this funk. And when you look at the play calling, that was, in my opinion, something that really, really helped Carson Wentz get out of a funk. Taylor Bauer says, you know, love the way they spread the ball. They spread out, then came back in quick on the fourth down snap and ran, you know, the fourth and one play. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you've got to have some ingenuity and some creativity, you know, in your arsenal to be able to catch defenses off balance. Look, football is a chess match. It's a nonstop chess match. And if you as a coaching staff are playing checkers and the other team is playing chess, you don't have a chance. That play signified that Doug Peterson can play chess sometimes. He's just got to do it more often. You know, he's got to get more creative. When you watch guys like, you know, Sean McVay and his creativity, when you look at Andy Reid and what he's able to do from a creative standpoint, you know, you play games with a defense's mind, not only the defensive coordinator, but the players as well. Because a lot of problems that defensive players have, to be honest with you, is the fact that they have bad eye discipline. You know, when you line up, you're lining up and, you know, you get the play call from a defensive player, you got to say to yourself, and you got to ingrain it, the defense's call. You got to say, hey, I got this on run, I got this on pass. Okay, let me lock into my key. Why is the key? Whoever it is that you're looking at, if it's an outside linebacker and you're lined up over top of a tight end, that tight end is your key. You're keying from him to the quarterback into the backfield. Okay. What do those things tell you? Those things tell you, first of all, if the tight end is trying to block me, I know right now there's a high possibility that it's a run play. Okay. So now it allows me to get to my responsibility and play football from there. Okay, if the tight end is trying to release, I know right now that it's a pass play. So I'm either trying to get with him, get my hands on him, jam him, get in position to be able to run with him, or I'm going to get one hand on him and I'm going to drop in zone to my zone responsibility. But what happens with a lot of players, and it really happens a lot with the Eagles defensive players, is that they get lazy with their eyes. They want to look and try to see where the ball is. They want to look in the backfield and see what the quarterback is doing. And you want to know who the two greatest liars are on the offensive side of the ball as to what's truly going on is the quarterback and the running back. Because the running back will start one way and they'll boot the other way. The quarterback will reverse out to his right to hand the ball off to the running back on the left. Why does he do that? Do we ever consider that? Do we ever really think about that? He's reversing out because he wants the linebackers to step to the right, get themselves out of position. As they run the ball to the left, that gives the offensive linemen blocking angles, okay? So when you're looking, when your eyes are in the right place, that means that you can read the play the proper way. Instead of you running up into the line of scrimmage on a play action pass, if you're reading the lineman and he's showing high hats, you know right now if you're in zone coverage, just turn and get out. Get your depth. But what do we see sometimes, you know, with our linebackers? What do you see? What do I see across the board across in the NFL period? I see linebackers and safeties with their eyes in the backfield. The ball is faked. They run up in the line of scrimmage. Now they're trying to get back, and they can't get back because the tight ends get free releases. The wide receivers get free releases. And the next thing you know, they're just dropping the ball right behind them. That's just bad coaching. That's just bad technique by players. So that play that Doug called, I mean, just a phenomenal job of playing with the minds and playing with the eyes of the defensive players of the San Francisco 49ers. I see a lot of you guys want to talk about defense today. Let me see. I'm trying to get a few more offensive plays before we jump over on the other side of the ball. Lawrence Melton says, get it done by any means necessary, Carson. Win ugly right now with all the regulars out. Hey, listen, at the end of the day, he's got to do what he's got to do. I was having this conversation on social media just the other day. This guy was complaining, making excuses for Carson's performance up until, you know, the last game. And I was like, listen, understand me. I'm a Carson Wentz fan. I want Carson to be successful. Everybody wants Carson to be successful if you're an Eagles fan, okay? But my job is to not only be critical, but my job is also to give props and give praise where necessary, okay? And throughout the game on my Twitter feed, what did I do? I gave Carson all kinds of pub. I gave him all kinds of props because dude was playing. I mean, he was straight balling. But at the other end of the spectrum for the last couple of weeks, he wasn't living up to the franchise quarterback mode. He wasn't living up to everyone's potential, well, everyone's expectation of him being an elite quarterback. So as an analyst, is it my job to sugarcoat what I saw, or is it my job to tell the truth? Okay. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Teams don't care that the Eagles have, you know, four young guys or three young guys starting, and a lot of times on the offensive line, and a lot of times four of them are actually in playing with Lane going out and Pryor having to step in for a while. The opponents don't care. They don't care that DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor and Dallas Goedert and Alshon Jeffries haven't even seen the field so far this year. You think they care? No one cares. Carson is going to be the focus because he's the franchise. He's going to be the focus because he's the quarterback. He's going to be the focus because he's the guy that the Eagles believe that can lead this team to another Super Bowl. So whether he has the weapons, whether he has the tools or not, nobody really cares. Because when you're tagged a franchise quarterback, your job is to raise the level of everyone around you, to make everyone around you better. And if that means, Travis Fulgham, if that means Greg Ward Jr., if that means John Hightower, doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter who it is. The same way he raised those guys' level at the end of last year, he's got to get it done. He's got to do it. We got our first caller with a great question. I bet Mike M is joining me today. Mike, welcome to the Seth Joyner Show. How you doing today, man?
Seth, you know you're the greatest. You know we have big love for way back. You know, so always thinking about you. And you know, it was funny last night how you came on with the debating and the tight end situation. But let me tell you what I think we need to do with this Steeler game specifically. And I don't know if it could be implemented in 2 or 3 days or not. You know, this is all about, you know, creativity and intelligence and a mentality. Anytime you play, you know, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, it's all mentality.
Right.
I'm going a huge, heavy run game. Five linemen, a tight end. I don't know who the two nastiest, either backups or the other guys either on offensive line or defensive line. I'm lining them up at fullback, and I'm doing almost like a wing T with and I'm running it Watt, I'm running it Dupree, I'm running it Bush. And then off of that package, you can, you know, have three or four things. You have both Miles, but I'm not if Carson, if we run that same offense against San Fran, Carson's gonna be running for his life all day. You know, those guys are too fast. You know, I am going right after those guys. You know, right. Pittsburgh, this is all mentality. You know that. So, right. You know, I'm running it down the throat. Then I'm running packages with maybe one vertical. I'm running Miles out of the backfield, doing some things. So, again, I'm a heavy, heavy run package. You know, it's something new. I don't know if you can implement that in 3 days. I mean, there's no reason you shouldn't. But I'm coming out with something different because, you know, that's where I'm at.
Well, Mike, listen, man, I appreciate the call. At the end of the day, every team has a short yardage and goal line package. Every team has a three tight end set, you know, formation where if you want to go 4 minute offense where you just run the ball downhill, you can absolutely do that. You know, I saw, I'm trying to see here, one of the listeners or one of the viewers put up a comment that we just signed a tight end, another tight end today. I'm trying to find it here. Derek, if you can find it, please put it up for me. Oh, here it is. Glenn Washington said, we picked up a potential stud at tight end and Hakeem Butler. He should be active. And we need every potential weapon available. Hey, listen, if they picked him up, you know, I don't know whether they got him off the waiver wire or whether they picked him up, you know, off of someone's practice squad. But I know that if you take him off someone's practice squad, that he has to be active. He has to be put on the active roster, I believe. Maybe, Mike, that's the thought that, hey, we're going into this game. We can't line up in our traditional spread set with all these young offensive linemen against, T.J. Watt and, you know, Cam Hayward. And I'm trying to remember the other kid's name. He's under a contract year, so I know he's going to be frothing at the mouth. He plays opposite T.J. Watt on the other side, number 48, I believe it is. But he's been playing out of his mind lately. I mean, you can't put Jordan Mailata and, you know, Jack Driscoll, if he has to play against these two pass rushers. You just can't do it. So I'd be curious to see, you know, if Doug will implement some of what he did last week, you know, in a creative type of way by going some two tight end sets, some three tight end sets, and isolating, you know, maybe Fulgham or maybe isolating Greg Ward Jr. in one-on-one situations. Because listen, if they do implement three tight end sets, you know, you can still throw the ball off a play action pass. You know, you can line Zach Ertz up at the wing. You can line up, you know, Richard Rodgers and this new Butler kid, you know, on the edges, and you can run the ball from those formations. And when you want to go play action pass, because if you're successful running the ball, then that means they're either going to have to take a corner out and put an extra linebacker in the game, or they're going to have to drop a safety in the box. The minute they drop the safety in the box, That means you got one-on-one on the edges. Whether you split Zach Ertz out, take him from the wing, and flex him out a little bit, and then you got Greg Ward or Fulgham over on the other side, those guys are going to be one-on-one because you only got single high safety. So it's going to create some opportunities for Carson if they run the ball well and if they commit and stick to the run. It's going to create a situation for Carson to go play action pass, look the safety off, and go back the other direction. The only thing that has to happen is Zach Ertz is going to have to win. They're probably going to line him up against the cornerback out there. And you know what? Fulgham or Greg Ward Jr. on the other side, they're just going to have to win some battles. And that, in my opinion, has to be the focus, you know, of the offense. Mike, you bring up a great point. Game plan is going to be crucial for this week because the strength of this, the strength of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, you got Ben Roethlisberger, and you know you got, you know, Schuster Smith. Those guys are going to do what they do, but everybody knows for years the strength of that football team has been that defense. And with our offense being as beat up as it is, missing as many weapons as it is, and being so down and at the offensive lineman position, we've got to have a really, really smart game plan for this defense. And you know, I agree with Mike 100%. You know, let's come out. You know, when it's all said and done, when I'm looking at my stat sheet, I want to see the Philadelphia Eagles run the ball for the first time in a long time, more than they actually throw the ball. Because if they can do that, they're going to minimize, they're going to shorten the game, minimize possessions, eat some clock, minimize the possessions of Ben Roethlisberger and that offense on the field, even though, you know, I think our defense is in a completely different place right now. But that's a smart game plan. Hey, guys, bring me some more questions, man. 361-857-9847. And my producer will bring you in. And as I say that, my man Glenn Washington. Welcome to the Seth Joyner Show, my friend. Turn that volume down. You're echoing, on me.
Hey, Seth, what's happening, man?
All good, brother. How you doing?
Yeah, I got you, man. I got you on the phone, too. I'm trying to get you all over the place, man. I'm great, man. I'm long-time Philadelphia, and I live in Atlanta now, but I've been watching, and, of course, big fan of yours. But I had a question. I think I posed this to you a couple of weeks ago on a thing. You weren't able to get to it. But there are situations or times where players like yourself that have prominence with the Eagles who that have so much respect and were great players that were here, and you yourself, Brian Dawkins, that they bring in from time to time to speak to the players regarding you know, whatever, to give a talk to encourage them in terms of playing the game, what have you. Is there any possibility that the Eagles can utilize you to talk or to help address the elephant in the room, which is the linebacking crew, that maybe you could talk to them, even if it was just an hour, to give them a sense of what the best way to prepare and the best way to utilize their eyes that they have, because they seem to be out of position, specifically number 47, a lot, and you know, they need probably some encouragement and maybe some a little more, I guess, attention from someone. Sometimes it's good to hear another voice, is what I'm saying, and a voice that's respected that may help in the developmental game, especially with the young guys like Bradley, Singleton. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll tell you, man. Glenn, thanks for the.
Was there any possibilities with that?
Well, listen, there's always the possibility. It's all about organizationally what teams want to do. Would I be open to it? Absolutely. But you want to know something, man. I mean, you got to realize the business of football. They have a linebacker coach and they have an assistant linebacker coach. So they're not going to want to muddle the message. And sometimes that's what happens. There are organizations that are open to that. They'll bring guys in training camp. You know, if there's specific things that they want players to work on. I've done the coaching intern deal where you go in for 6 weeks. You know, listen, it would be a great idea, But, you know, as masculine as the game of football is, at the other end of the spectrum, too, there is ego that goes along with it as well. I mean, you have to realize if I go in and I start talking to these players and these players start listening to me, what does that say about Coach Flagel and the job that he's doing with the linebacker? I mean, you there are certain things that can't be broached and won't be broached because that's the business of the game. And sometimes, you know, when you talk about bringing players in, that's the problem within itself. It's the message that goes to the players. You know, it's, you know, who does a player trust? You know, he's supposed to trust what his coach is telling him and what his coach is teaching him. You know, now, I don't know. It's you know, half a dozen over here and half a dozen another over there. You know, is the player not developing because he's not taking the coaching? Or is the coaching lacking something that's not allowing the player to develop? You know, that could be said in both directions. You can look at some players that played linebacker here, that left here, and you never heard from them before. And yet and still, you can think about some players that didn't pan out and develop here. They went somewhere else, got better coaching, in my opinion, and turned into great players. So I get what you're saying, and I understand. Trust me, I understand. I would be all in for it because I want to see these young players develop. I want to see them get better. I want to take the knowledge and the wisdom of playing in the league for 13 years and everything that I learned from Buddy Ryan and Bud Carson and Fritz Schirmer and some of these great minds and be able to teach, you know, and Wade Phillips and Jeff Fisher. I want to take that knowledge that I gained from those guys and be able to pass it on to the next generation. And who better than, you know, these linebackers in Philadelphia? But at the end of the day, it comes down to them asking me to do that, okay? And sometimes that just doesn't pan out. And listen, I'm a critical voice. That's part of what I do, you know? So are they open to a critical voice that speaks his truth and speaks his mind about the team when the team isn't doing well or points out things that he thinks could be done better? Are they going to bring that voice into their locker room to speak? Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. Well, like I said earlier, I'm happy to announce, you know, our first sponsor of the Seth Joyner Show, the Vigit betting app. And we'll be back in just a second after you take a look at this commercial.
Vigit, the sports betting social network app, available on Google Play and the Apple App Store. Make picks, share betting tips, win prizes, and much more for free. Right from your smartphone or tablet. Use promo code BETWITHSETH to get 1,000 Vigit coins when you sign up. Download the Vigit app now and follow me, Seth Joyner, to see my picks. Think you can beat me? Then put your Vigit coins where your mouth is and send me your picks on Vigit, the sports betting social network app.
We're back talking our birds, talking about this major victory, 25-20 victory over the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday Night Football, and what a game it was. Right now, I want to jump over to the defensive side of the ball. Seems like to me, you know, everyone, and I'm going to go back because I couldn't remember that linebacker's name from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Number 48 is Bud Dupree. He's playing some great football for the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. Everyone wants to talk the defense. I get it. I understand. Hey, listen, the defense has been playing out of its mind. The Philadelphia Eagles, believe it or not, are leading the NFL in sacks with 19 sacks. I believe they're fifth in third down conversion. So as bad as it looks, the defense hasn't played all that bad the last couple of weeks, particularly, you know, against the San Francisco team. Listen, anytime you had 8 sacks against the Cincinnati Bengals, and then they follow it up this week again. Let me get my numbers here. Excuse me one second. They follow it up this week with 5 more sacks. And they're getting some production out of some guys that we really didn't – I didn't see. I didn't see Josh Sweat taking it to the next level, leading this football team in sacks at this point. And we know what BG is going to bring to the table. BG is, you know, he's just a straight baller. You know, dude plays with a lot of energy, and you know you're going to get, you know, great production out of him. You're not going to get high sack numbers. He's going to be a guy that's probably going to be right around 8 to 9 sacks a season. But, you know, he's going to make plays for you. He's going to be a presence. Jannard Avery, the last 2 weeks, has begun to flash. Derek Barnett, the last 2 weeks, has begun to flash and make some plays. You know, Malik Jackson is playing with great energy. I can't wait until, you know, we can get Javon Hargrave back to 100% and get some more production out of him. I think he's going to be an integral part this week. We're watching this defense, you know, really play some really good football. You know, they only gave up 116 yards rushing. That's not a big deal, given the fact that, you know, the 49ers really tried to run the ball quite a bit with Mullins struggling. 301 yards in the game, and to be honest with you, a lot of that was junk yards at the end of the game, had me pulling my hair out as much prevent as Jim Schwartz was in. And at linebacker, Alex Singleton. Hey, listen, I've been calling for this guy to get an opportunity for a long time, because when you watch him in preseason, the previous 2 years, all he's done is made plays. To me, he is one of the best tacklers in this linebacking core. I get it. You know, you've got a draft pick invested in Nate Gary. TJ Edwards is a draft pick, and he's been around for a while. But in my opinion, the linebacking core is a problem. And it's a problem that's glaring, because you think about the genius at the end of that game of Kyle Shanahan, realizing that the linebacking core is a problem. Do you realize he went back to more traditional sets in the fourth quarter of that game? You saw 2 backs and a tight end. That's 21 personnel on quite a few plays. Why did he do that? To get the third linebacker on the field. You get the third linebacker on the field, you can create all kinds of mismatch problems, and that's what they began to do. I mean, listen, Kittles is a guy, you know, he's gonna get his numbers. But come on, 193 yards and a touchdown, I believe 15 targets and 15 catches. To me, that falls on the linebackers, because I talked about it, you know, last night. You know, the previous caller talked about me tweeting about, you know, these tight ends. Okay, you got dominant tight ends in this league. When Zach Ertz is right, he's a dominant tight end. Something's amiss right now, whether it's coverage, an injury, the contract. I don't know what it is, but he's not right now. But you're talking about Kittles and Kelsey and Waller and Cook. And these guys are lining up attached and flexed and detached, flexed wide. And no one's putting their hands on them. 6'5", 250-plus pounds, can run like, you know, slow wide receivers, which is still pretty fast in this game, and you don't put your hands on them, and you don't jam them, you don't inhibit their route, you don't try to throw off the timing of the route, and these guys are catching balls all over the place. And Mike Shanahan, or Kyle Shanahan, I should say, he knew what he was doing. He knew that those linebackers were going to have to cover Travis Kelce. He knew they were going to have to cover guys out of the backfield. And, I mean, it worked to perfection, because the 49ers almost really got back into a game that they, in my opinion, they really never were in, or they shouldn't have been in. So the linebacker position remains a big question mark. I think Alex Singleton has shown this coaching staff that he is worthy of more playing time. And a lot of people tweeted and said, hey, you know what? He just happened to be in the right place at the right time, you know, and the quarterback threw the ball right to him. Maybe so. He still had to make the catch. He still had to drop in the proper place. And he still had to understand what the route was being run behind him to be in position to make the play. He made the most of his opportunity. But listen, the guy's a sure tackler. In my opinion, he knows what he's doing. And he needs to be given a shot to get more playing time. I think it's time, in my opinion, that Jim Schwartz open up the competition again at the linebacker position. Give these young guys an opportunity. Listen, Bradley and Taylor, they may not know what they're doing, but I can guarantee you they're going to play full speed. I know Sean Bradley is going to play full speed. He's going to knock somebody out, and if he's supposed to be covering the tight end, he's going to jam him and run with him because I've seen him cover. I taught him how to cover to a certain extent, not taking any credit for, you know, what it is that he is or what he'll become. But we worked on man-to-man coverage, you know, when I coached him. And I'm telling you right now, Taylor is athletic as well. These guys need to be given an opportunity because when you're not getting the production at that position, you got to ramp up the competition and give these other guys an opportunity to either A, unseed one of these guys unless you don't want it to happen, or light a fire under these guys that are starting and give them an opportunity. Now, I believe Edwards is hurt, and I believe Duke Riley is hurt. That's going to create some opportunities for some more opportunities for some of these young guys to show what they can do. But the only way the position is going to get better is to create competition. The competition is going to make all the cream rise to the top. And then, and only then are you going to find out what you truly have in these players because you haven't had an opportunity in preseason to see them play. So you got to put them in a game type situation at some point to see what they can do rather than just sticking with what you see. And the guys that were here last year and allowing them to just play with little production. I'm sorry, Nate Gary is not a linebacker. That's just the truth. I don't have anything against the guy, but when I watch him play, he doesn't have any instincts. He doesn't know what he's reading at the beginning of a play. So he's one of those guys when I talk about the quarterback sticking the ball out, going play action pass, instead of him reading the offensive lineman that will tell him on every play what whether it's run or pass, he's looking at the quarterback, he's looking at the running back, he's biting up in the line of scrimmage. And sometimes in man-to-man situations, when he has a guy in man-to-man situation, so now he's late to the coverage, especially in tight end situations. His vision should be on the tight end. If the tight end is blocking, okay, now you can look back and see what the play is, okay? But if you got that tight end to man-to-man coverage and you're stacked off the line, your vision has to be on the tight end. Because if that guy blocks down and releases or he releases right now, that's your man in coverage. So the opportunity for some of these young guys to step up. Hey, listen, they're doing it on the offensive side of the ball. Why not on the defensive side of the ball? Give these young guys an opportunity. Give them a chance. You just never know. You never know how they're going to react. Some guys don't practice well. And a lot of times what happens with coaches is they base their trust in players off of how these guys practice, okay? If just as long as they have the basic understanding of what they're supposed to do, sometimes guys are just gamers. Sometimes you put them in the play, you put them on the field, and all of a sudden they show you something that you did not know that they possessed. I'm speaking from experience because it was the same way. I can remember the seventh game or eighth game of my rookie year coming in, and Buddy Ryan looked at me, called me to his office. I thought I was getting cut again. He calls me in. He was like, hey, learn your blankety blank. I'm starting you this week, not because I want to, but because I have to. Well, I had 10 tackles that game, stepped up, played a big game. Now all of a sudden this coaching staff realized that, you know, I could be more than just a special teams player. You just never know. And in my opinion, sometimes that's what needs to happen. Jalen Mills. I believe that the Jalen Mills experiment in safety might be over. He's flashed and he's come up and he's been, you know, physical and aggressive in situations where, you know, we needed him to be. But he played a pretty solid game at cornerback. And with the injury to Avanti Maddox and how long it might take for him to get back, and even when he gets back, will he still be 100% with a hamstring injury? You know, Kayvon Wallace got some playing time. Will Sparks will be coming back off of injured reserve shortly. So I think they've got some safeties that they can fill in there. I'm just a big proponent of being able to, you know, give Jalen Mills back his old spot and move forward with everyone else. Jay Koch wants to know, hey, Seth, do you think Schwartz will keep dialing up the blitz? Can't have a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger sit in the pocket and pick him apart. Well, hey, listen, you had a backup quarterback, and then you had a third-team quarterback that stepped in last week. I give Jim Schwartz a lot of credit. He did a lot of different things in that game last week that we hadn't seen. You saw some five-man line to create some one-on-ones. You had some Eagle defense looks, you know, where the three interior linemen cover up the center and two guards, and you kick the two ends out, you know, in a wide nine, you know, setup. He ran linebacker blitzes off the corner. We haven't seen that since Michael Kendricks was a linebacker here. They even brought, you know, slot corner blitzes and corners off the slot, off the side. I mean, he did some innovative things. I don't know if he'll pull that out of his repertoire and use that against Ben, unless it's in, you know, necessary situations, because Ben Roethlisberger is, you know, a seasoned vet. There's very little you're going to be able to show him that he hasn't seen. And if you're not good enough and you're not, you know, apt enough as a defense to be able to sugar and then drop out, you know, in coverage, if you're not able to, you know, disguise what you do, and, you know, it was reported a couple of weeks ago that the Eagles defense is one of the easiest defenses, you know, to play against, because they don't disguise a lot of what they do. They just line up and play. If you don't disguise it, Ben Roethlisberger will make the correct check. He will find the correct mismatch, and he will create a situation for them to be in the right play at the right time. I think the biggest thing that they need to do is they just need to come out and play good, solid run defense and force Ben into a passing situation. And hopefully the offense can pick up and do what it did last week and create some opportunities to get out with the lead and force their hand. Now you can create situations to do that. My ex college roommate has got a question for us. Robert Bouvier Murray. He wants to know, who do you think will eventually step up and take a command and lead and dominate in the NFC East? I would say that whichever team's defense begins to stop making so many mistakes, I agree. I don't think anybody's going to dominate in the NFC East. You know, I believe that it's like I said in the beginning of the year, it's going to be a two-team race, the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. And right now, the thing that scares me about the Dallas Cowboys is that offense, you know, when they get behind and when they decide to air it out, you know, listen, Dak Prescott is, you know, he's averaging 450 yards a game passing, you know, and when he starts to move around, if you don't contain him, he's even that much more dangerous. But you look at them over on the other side of the ball, I don't even recognize that defense right now. They got one of the worst defenses in the NFL right now. And some of their best players just aren't producing. What happened to DeMarcus Lawrence? What is going on, you know, with the linebacker? His name eludes me at the moment. It'll come to me in a minute. But, you know, 54 has been a mainstay in that defense. You know, he looks like, you know, sometimes that he's just clueless. So even though it's a half a game lead that the Eagles possess, I mean, you got to look at the rest of the schedule and try to figure out, hey, what is it going to look like, you know, at the end of the day? You know, I favor the fact that the Eagles defensively are a better football team at this point in time. Jalen Smith, thank you, Shar. The Eagles are a better defensive team right now. The question is, when they face the Cowboys, are they going to be able to handle, you know, Zeke in the running game if they ever get back to giving him the ball? Are they going to be able to handle, you know, those three potent wide receivers? Are they going to be able to keep Dak Prescott in the pocket? Because in my opinion, it's going to come up, it's going to turn into a shootout. You know, then will the Eagles get to a point, and Carson Wentz, can he get to a point by the time they get to the Dallas Cowboys in week 7 and week 8, I believe it is, you know, will he have found his footing? Will he have righted the ship? Will he have gotten enough weapons back? You know, can we get Jason Peters back 100% healthy? Can we get Lane Johnson back 100% healthy? Will Isaac Seumalo be able to come off of short-term injury reserve and be able to step back in and get it all done? Will you be able to get DeSean Jackson back 100% and Jalen Reagor back 100%? And will Alshon Jeffrey, you know, be able and willing and healthy enough at that point in time to make a difference on the offensive side of the ball? If that's the case and we heal up across the board and we're at 100%, then yeah, in my opinion, the Eagles are going to run away with the division, because the Dallas Cowboys are the Dallas Cowboys. They always find a way to mess it up. They always find a way to screw it up. There's no way in the world you can tell me, with all the talent that they have on that team, that they should be finding themselves, you know, down double digits every single game and then having to come back. Really, right now, they should be 0-4. You know, the Atlanta Falcons, you know, just completely gave that game away there. But there's no reason in the world why that team should, you know, have that one win in the win column. Lawrence Melton wants to, he just said, Jason Peters retired. He's just in denial. Listen, you look at what Jordan Mailata did. Listen, he took advantage of an opportunity that was presented to him. And sometimes, you know, when you're a late round draft pick, that door of opportunity only opens once for you. And it's not going to happen, because Doug Peterson loves him. Howie Roseman loves him. And I believe Jeffrey Lurie loves him to a certain extent. I don't think that they're going to, I don't think that they're going to set that ship to sail. I believe that when Jason Peters is ready to play, that they'll move him back in at left tackle. But I'm of the other opinion. If Jordan Mailata continues to play as well as he played the other night, you know, I believe that his development is critical. Jordan Mailata is going to be on this football team. Jason Peters, this is his last rodeo, okay? There is no way in the world you're going to tell me that they're going to bring this guy back at $8 million a year for him to come back and play 5-6 games a year. They just cannot do that. And he's going to require that they pay him starting left tackle money. Why not give the job to Jordan Mailata? Okay, if he continues to play well, by the time Peters come back off the 3-game injured reserve, my opinion is cut the cord. If you want to have him back up left tackle and have him back up, you know, at guard, by all means. But I'm not for thwarting or arresting the development of these young guys on a team this year that is now 1-2-1. And if they don't get it together in the next 2 weeks and figure out a way how to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers and figure out a way how to make it a game against the Baltimore Ravens, that this season could be a flush real quick. So why not give these young guys a chance? Look at what you produced last year with all these young guys in. Give them an opportunity, because they're the future. There's going to come a point in time where you're going to have to cut the cord. You're going to have to cut the cord and let, you know, Jason Peters go. You're going to have to think about what you're going to do with Fletcher Cox. And I said it last week. Hey, you know, many of you are familiar with that game that some young kids, you know, play. Hey, where's Waldo? Hey, where is Fletcher? Where's Fletcher Cox? I see everybody on the defensive line making plays except for Fletcher Cox. But he's getting to that point in his contract when he's going to want to be paid again. This guy just is finishing up and I believe he's got maybe a year or two left, a $100 million 5-year contract extension, okay? Almost $20 million a year when you take out, let's just call it $20 million a year, okay? Are we getting $20 million a year of production out of Fletcher Cox? This organization has to ask themselves that question. You know, are we going to try to move on in some way from Alshon Jeffrey next year? Or are we just going to eat that salary? You know, when you have guys, and this is one of the reasons why most organizations, and this is the reason why a guy like, I think that we are frustrated with a guy like Joe Banner. You know, once a player approached 29, 30 years old, and you even see it, you even begin to see it, you know, with the New England Patriots. You look at how Bill Belichick does things. You know, where was Sony Michel last night? All of a sudden, you got this guy that came out of nowhere, you know, and he got the bulk of the carries last night. Because what these GMs think about is that when guys hit a certain age, they cost so much that it becomes too cost effective to keep these guys around. $8 million in the salary cap. And three games in, Jason Peters is already on injury reserve. Three games in, and I can remember one play in the Bengals game where Fletcher flexed and showed up when, at a time where we really needed him to show up. You know, if the production doesn't match up, then at some point you got to cut the cord. We got serious considerations. You think about Zach Ertz. When I said, when Zach Ertz is right, when he's right, he's an elite, almost uncoverable tight end. But right now he's not right. Something's amiss. I don't know whether he's pissed off with Howie Roseman because they didn't get the extension done. I'm not sure whether he's injured or banged up. I'm not sure whether, you know, with Dallas Goedert out of the lineup right now, the teams don't have to worry about that other tight end and 12 personnel. You saw Richard Rodgers, you know, catch a couple of balls last week. You know, so if their intent is to look at Zach Ertz and completely take him away, and he's not finding a way to beat double coverage, are we willing to pay him $15, $16 million a year like a Kerry Kittles, like a Travis Kelce? You know, listen, I get it. You know, we'll forever be indebted to some of these guys. They gave this organization and this fan base something that it hadn't had in 60 years. But from the business side of football, you got to look at these things and make the correct judgment and ask yourself, is it worth it? Is it worth it with guys that are on the downside of their career to continue to pay them top dollar when you have so many other needs that need to be addressed in your football team? And you got young guys that are coming up, you know? You got young guys that are coming up that have to be paid. Miles Sanders, a couple of years away. Lane Johnson is the guy that I favor, you know, signing to an extension. You got Isaac Seumalo, who's going to have to be paid. I mean, you got guys on your roster that are going to have to be paid, so you have to begin to start talking about and making these business decisions pretty darn quickly here, you know. And some of these guys have got to go. They got to go. And that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. Before we get out of here, I want to talk about Jim Schwartz, and I want to talk about, you know, his play calling. I believe that, you know, like I said earlier, that he may have called one of his better games this past week with the creativity, with the pressure on the quarterback early. But the thing that really kind of ticked me off the most is watching the end of that game, because C.J. Beathard comes in. He goes 14 for 19, 138 yards, and then moving the ball down the field. Now, C.J. Beathard is the third string quarterback. We're not talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. We're not talking about Nick Mullins, who had played pretty decently leading up to this game. And then our defense turned up the pressure on him and showed him for what he really is. Okay? We're talking about the third string quarterback in C.J. Beathard. And we let him sit in the pocket and get comfortable and methodically move the ball down the field, and score a touchdown and make this a game. Okay. At what point are we going to get out of this prevent defense? Okay. You could have showed him a prevent defense and brought an extra guy and create some pressure and speed up his clock and force him into a mistake. But when guys are lined up 10, 15, 30 yards off the ball, you're giving this quarterback the thought and with a tight end and George Kittle, who's already killing you, averaging 12 yards of reception, and you didn't come after this guy one time. And furthermore, you allowed him to get in position to throw a Hail Mary that if Darius Slay doesn't make the play of the game to knock it away, they catch that ball. Ayuk catches that ball, or Kittle catches that ball, and we lose that game in a heartbreaker. I just don't understand this passive mentality. Ike Reese talked about it last week. You know, we're happy. Thank you, Jim Schwartz, for what you brought to Philadelphia in Super Bowl 52. But this mentality of defense and this mentality of defensive play calling, it doesn't even fit Philadelphia. It doesn't even match up with who Philadelphia is, you know? And at some point in time, that culture needs to change, okay? That's not Buddy Ryan. That's not Bud Carson. That's not Jim Johnson, okay? That's not Ray Bob. I mean, these are coaches who believed in applying the pressure and speeding up the clock of quarterbacks to force them to make mistakes. And even much more so, young quarterbacks, inexperienced quarterbacks, and backups. And yet we let a guy stand on the sideline, cold, hadn't played all game, hadn't played since last year, maybe 2 years ago, come in and almost win this game. Carson talks about it. Doug talks about it. Even we hear other players talking about it. Got to do better. Got to be better. And will be better. I need to see that out of you, Jim Schwartz. That's the show for today. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for the question. Next time, let's get a few more questions. Live. I want you guys to come on and interact with me live. I see all your questions here. And I'll answer some of them, you know, after the show is over. But I want you guys on live with me. I want to see your face. We only got two guys in. Let's get some women in with some questions. But that's our show today. Hey, listen, before I go, props to Viget. Let's talk about the Eagles game. You guys can catch me over on the betting app. The under over for the show, I mean for the game. The Pittsburgh game will be 44. I'm going to take the over because I think both teams will most certainly figure out a way to score some points in this game. The Eagles are getting 7 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think that this team has turned the corner. I won't give you a score, but if I was a betting man, I'd take the Eagles and the 7 points in this game. And as we leave, hey, listen. You guys be good to each other, take care of each other, and most importantly, love each other. We have a flag football, Delaware flag football, coming up. We got a camp on a tournament on Sunday, November 1st. There's the flyer. Peace out, guys. I will see you guys next week. Fly, Eagles, fly.